Okay, today's daf is Nida Samach Zion. I'm going to start four lines from the bottom of Samach Vav Amud Bet, the last case of Rava. There were six halachas of Rava, so we're on the sixth now. Okay, yesterday's daf had a whole list of different halachot that Rava had relating to Nida issues. So, Amar Rava, Isha lo ta'amor agabei kli cheres v'titvol. A woman can't stand on top of an earthenware vessel and then dunk in the mikvah. Okay, so in other words, let's say there's this vessel in the mikvah and she stands on it. Okay, so you can't do that. So savar of kahana lememach. Whenever they say savar, it means he thought to say, meaning he'll be corrected soon. Okay, so what did he think to say? He thought to say that the reason you can't stand on an earthenware vessel in the mikveh is tamamai mishum zerat merchatzaot, because it's similar. Okay, try to think in your mind that this is really similar. It's similar to a bathhouse. In a bathhouse, normally, right, imagine you go to a spa, there's benches, right? So standing on this vessel somehow to him seemed like, well, maybe you'll think that what? That you can go to the mikveh in a bathhouse because it's similar to a bathhouse. And they didn't want people to think, because you can't use a bathhouse for a mikveh. So therefore, he thought that was why you can't stand on this earthenware vessel. Hal gabe silta shapir dame. But from there, one can infer, though, if it was on some wooden thing, which wasn't what they used in the bathhouse, then it would be okay. Right? So Amarle Rav Chana minahardeha hatam tal mamai mishum debayit. The reason why we don't allow you to stand on the earthenware vessel isn't because it looks like a bathhouse and people might think that, oh, you can go to the mikveh in a bathhouse. No, it's because we're worried that she's going to be nervous, that she's going to fall off of it. And if she's nervous, she's going to fall, well, then she's not going to tovel the proper way, right? She's going to quickly kind of stand there and not really dunk fully. So he says, well, then in that case, right, Sultanami Bi'ita, if you were on this wooden thing, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter whether it's wood or it's earthenware, the same issue is going to come up. They were worried she's going to be nervous and therefore will fall. It's not kavana. It's that she's not going to tovel properly. She might not go all the way under. She'll be worried she's going to fall. She'll do very quickly and she'll go out. We're not worried about her intent. We're worried that she's going to not actually do it properly. Okay, you can see Rashi says Shaloti Pol, the very last line in Rashi, below Tavla Shapir. She's not going to tovel properly. Okay, the assumption is not everything will go underwater. Right, that usually they're the most worried about her hair going underwater. So if you go quickly, you know, it could be some of the hair will stay on top, and then she won't end up being yotze her tefillah. Amar Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak. So now we're finished with the six halachot of Rava, and now we're moving on to another issues about mikvah. Amar Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, Isha lo titbol min amal. She shouldn't go in the port where there's, you can even see Rashi says porto, okay? Shouldn't go in a port. He says where there's boats, because what's the problem? So Rashi says there's a lot of mud in the ground and dirt, and we're worried that she's going to be dirty and there'll be dirt on her body, and now we're going to get into the issue of chatzitza, anything blocking her body from the water. Right? There can't be any sort of separation. So that's the issue. Other people claim, no, really the issue is that we're worried there's people around, and if there's people around, this connects with the previous statement, which is she's going to rush. And if she rushes, she, again, won't tovel properly. So it's a bit of a debate about what the issue is here. Afagav dehashta leka emar birgione nafal. So then they say, even if, now, again, this works a little better with the first interpretation, even if there's mud, right? And the concern is there's mud, and then there'll be dirt on her body. Now, even if she gets out of the mikveh and she sees she's totally clean, we still have to be concerned that maybe there was mud on her, and as she walked out, Bergione Nafal means as she was, you know, her feet were in the water. Imagine you go to the beach and you have sand in your feet, but as you're walking out of the water, it removes some of the sand from your feet. Obviously, you get sand on your feet a minute later, but the point is that just because you don't see anything right now doesn't mean it wasn't there when you toveled. It might have gotten removed as you were walking through the water to get out. So therefore, even though you don't see anything right now, it could be that there was something there before.
Or the opposite.
What's the opposite?
The opposite is if you're inside water, even if it's muddy, the water washes away everything at the moment.
Well, then you wouldn't have an issue. But there, Dafka is saying it is an issue. They're concerned, Dafka, that it will be. Okay? It's concern, right? It doesn't mean necessarily. Okay. Avua de Shmuel. So the father of Shmuel, Avid Lebinte Mikvaot Biyome Nisan. He made mikvaot for his daughters in Nisan. What does it mean he made the mikvaot? It means he took water that was in a stream and he channeled it into a little ditch. He dug a ditch channeled it into the ditch so that they'd have a mikveh. What was the issue? This is a separate issue in mikveh, which is mikveh can either be fresh rainwater, stream water that's streaming, or rainwater that's gathered in a place. So either the water's streaming, zochalim, or it's water that's collected. But if you end up, so that's rainwater, right? Otherwise, it's stream water. But if you end up that the stream is, majority of it becomes rainwater, that becomes a problem. And as you can't have streams that are full of mainly rainwater. Either it has to be one or the other. So at the end of the rainy season, there was a concern that most of the water, the majority was rainwater, either from the rain or from the snow dripping down from the mountains. And because of that, he had to kind of take the water, channel it into a pit so that it would be collected rainwater and not rainwater that's kind of, you know, became the majority of the water that was streaming. So in that season, he would do that. And in Mapatzei B'Yom HaTishrei, and at the end of the summer season, he would put down these mats on the, now the question is, what were the purpose of the mats? Either it connects with the previous sugya, according to the second interpretation, that the concern was that women would rush because there were people around, so he would make these partitions. Okay, so in other words, either he had, then you have to look at it like this, either he had these separate mikvaot for them, which were a little bit more private, but in the summer, he couldn't do that because there wasn't enough water to do that with. So what did he do? He put up partitions so that they could go in the public space, but they'd be blocked and they'd do it in a tsanua way, which then meant that they would tovel properly. Some people say the issue is the dirt. Again, going back to the first interpretation. And if there's dirt, what do you do? Right? Because again, it's more shallow then, so there's more of a chance, because there's less rainwater in there, more of a chance you're going to get dirty. So he put mats on the bottom of it, and that way the dirt wouldn't get in their feet, and that was a way to protect from the mud.
Rav Tabadi made the point yesterday that this is an example of parents still taking care of their children even after they're married.
Well, that's true, although again, going back to the other sugyot, the girls might have been very young. And I mean, they did have their periods, and they're right. But again, they could have been 13, 14, and, you know, also taking care of
their
parents.
Living in their husband's houses,
right,
or whatever.
Right. Yes. Well, not necessarily. Maybe they were even living with their.
Right, you never know.
Right, you never know. Or, right, maybe they were doing it for tahara purposes and they weren't even married. So anyway, lots of different ways to view this. Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, Natna Tavshil Libina. Okay, this is quite, you know, generally women were doing this. If you give some food to your son, the assumption here is, right, interesting they say to your son, not to your daughter, but anyway, they mean to your children. If you were preparing food and the food was sticky and it got on your fingers, right, B'tavla V'alta Lo Alta Latvila, and then even though she goes into the mikvah, she comes out, afagav dahashta leka, even though now she sees no dirt on her hands, ema birdioni nafal. Again, the same thing could happen. And this comes up in the halacha, in the Shulchan Aruch, you know, don't eat things that might get stuck between your teeth. Don't deal, if you're dealing with sticky dough and things like that, they're going to get stuck on your fingers. Right? You have to be very careful because it's very hard for that stuff to get off. And then, you know, you have to be worried, even if you don't see anything when you get out of the mikveh. Right? Normally we think of situations, what if you find something after you get out of the mikveh? This is situations where you actually don't see anything after the mikveh, but we have to be concerned that maybe it was on your body when you toveled and just got off when you left the water. Again, it's a little different nowadays when we just kind of dunk in and come right out. But in those days, they went in the river. And by the time they got out of the river, a little more time elapsed, probably. I don't know how much more time. I don't know. They went in the middle of the river, but possibly. And therefore, there was a concern it came off. Amarami bar Abba. Hane ravde de kusilta. This is, remember, they bloodlet very often. So when you bloodlet, right, you start to develop a scab because it's a hole in your body. It starts to develop a scab. So, ad talta yome, the first 3 days, lo chaitze. It's not considered a chatzitza. But mikam va'ela chaitze, because what happens over time? You get a big scab, and the scab itself is a chatzitza. Amar mar ukva, lifluf shaba'ayin. If you have that gook in your eye, so, if it's lach, if it's liquidy, eno chotzeitz, if it's moist. But yavesh, as soon as it dries out, and you have like a little clump of stuff there on your eye, it is chotzeitz. When do we determine that it's yavesh? When it starts to get greenish in color. Then you know that it's dried out and then it's a problem. Amar Shmuel, kol shebetoch ha'ayin, eino chotzeitz. V'shal gabei ha'ayin chotzeitz. This was this eyeshadow that they would use both for makeup purposes and also for medicinal purposes. And sometimes they would put it in their eye. It was some sort of salve that they used that they would put in their eye that had some color to it. That's why they call it kol, like from it's like an eyeshadow type thing. So if it's in your eye, that's not considered a chatzitza. But if you put it on top of your eye, on your eyelid, like we would put eyeshadow, then it is chotzitz. Im ayu einecha porchot, afilu agabei ayin eino chotzitz. If she blinked like constantly, she had some issue, I guess, with her eye that was constantly blinking, then even on top of the eye is not a problem, because the assumption is, right, people know with eyeshadow, it doesn't always stay on so well, especially if you don't have such great eyeshadow. I'm sure they didn't develop eyeshadow in those days as, you know, the way that it's developed nowadays. And so then it will come off, and therefore even that's not considered a chatzitza. I'm Rabbi Yochanan.
In that comparison to the way to permanent makeup versus regular makeup?
No, well, regular makeup you still have to take off. Because,
you do.
Yeah.
Permanent makeup.
This is saying, no, but this is saying you don't even have to take it off. This is saying if it comes off very easily, it's the opposite of what you're saying.
Right.
It comes off very easily, then you don't have to take it off. But permanent makeup is the other extreme. Then already, that's going to be something that we're going to talk about in a few minutes, which is if you're not makpid to take it off, you never take it off because it's permanent, well, then it's just considered part of your body, and then it's not a problem. So we have all the extremes. We have
rings and netilat
yadayim. Exactly. So if you take something, we're going to get to that on the second side of the page. But if those are the extremes, and the middle is going to be problematic, right? Because if it's really almost coming off, well, then it's not a problem. And if it's staying on forever, it's not a problem. But if it's in between, then it's going to be an issue. Amar Rish Lakish? No. Amar B'Yochanan? Okay. Patchayineha B'Yoter. O Atzmayineha B'Yoter. Lo Altala Tfila. When you go dunk onto the mikveh, don't close your eyes too much, because look what happens when you do that. You get all these crinkles in your eye, and you have like, it kind of wrinkles. And then what happens? Well, the water doesn't get there. Okay? Or don't open your eyes too much, because if you open your eyes too wide, again, you're making wrinkles at the top on your eyelid. So, right, this is, when you go in the mikveh, everything should kind of be lightly closed. And that way, the water can get everywhere. This, you have to question how this goes back to what we saw yesterday, which is as long as the water can actually get there, even if it doesn't get there. So, I don't know, I guess the concern is if you really crease it too much, the water can't actually ever get there, you'd have to say. Amar Rish Lakish, Haisha lo titbol ela derech gedelata. She should tovel the way she stands, kind of like with everything kind of being loose, like nothing again, nothing clumped together, nothing tight. Kiditnan, as it says in the Mishnah. Now we're going to have a Mishnah in Negaim about when you go show the Kohen, if you have a leprous mark, so the way you go show the Kohen, you have to stand in a way that the Kohen can kind of see everywhere. So how do you do that? Ha'ish near eke oder u'mosek seitim. So the man is either like he's hoeing, so he's kind of leaning over with his arms outstretched. So again, the issue is always your underarms, and he could see places that are normally hidden. Or picking olives off the tree where his hands are raised up.
Security in the airport.
Yeah, exactly. Isha nira'et ka'oreget. I guess they're trying to give examples within their regular, right? The men were outside in the fields, the women were weaving. So when they're weaving, you lean over a little, and again, your arms are reaching forward. Ukeminikait bina. Okay, and the way she's, this is a little bit of a weird one, and then try to think about her showing the Kohen. It sounds like when you go to the gynecologist, you know, that he's allowed to see your body. You know, the idea is that she has to show him under her breast. So when you lift your breast, when you breastfeed. So the idea is that, you know, it's kind of more showing more part of her body. It's interesting that they'd be talking about this, that she's standing in front of the Kohen like that. But I guess he has to see parts of her body to be able to check about the marks. Amar, right, they didn't have female Kohenim that were checking or anything. Amar Barapuna. Okay, so therefore that's the way you're supposed to be toveling, with your arms kind of outstretched, okay, and your breast kind of showing, so that, you know, it's not like stuck down, that the water can't get through there. Amar Barav Huna, Nima achat kshura chotzetzet. Now, what if you have a knot in one hair? So that's going to create a problem. That's a chatzitza. But shalosh enan chotzetzo. But if you have three hairs intertwined, that's not a chatzitza. Why not? Because the water can get through there. If you have three hairs intertwined, the water can get through. If it's one with a knot, think about one knot, it's more of a problem. But three intertwined, that's not a problem. Now, notice what he doesn't talk about. What about two, right? He says one is fine. One is a problem. Three is not a problem. Shtayim ein yodea. He says, but I don't actually know about two of them. Rabbi Yochanan amar, anu ein lanu ela achat. He says, no, we only know that one is a problem, meaning two is not going to be a problem either. Okay, here comes the line that we mentioned before. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, dvar Torah on a Torah level, rubo hamakpid alav chotzetz. if something covers the majority and your machpid, and you don't, I specifically said the majority and I didn't say the majority of what, I'll explain why in a minute. So if it's on rubo and your machpid, you don't want it to be there, right, as opposed to this permanent makeup kind of idea, then it's chotzetz. That's a chatzitza. From the Torah, something's only a chatzitza if it covers the majority of, and now fill in the blank. So Rashi says, look at Rashi, he says, rubo rov sa'aro kashor chat achat. It has to be, he's talking, he says, this is all just about hair. This isn't about the body. Okay, he's talking about meaning if with a body, even if it's on a minority part of the body, it would be a chatzitza midoraita. The hair, it has to cover the majority of the hair. But other people, and we paskin this way against Rashi, most of the Rishonim say it means also most of the body. That in order for it to be a chatzitza midoraita, it has to cover most of the body, and you have to not want it to be there. Okay, which already limits most chatzitzas. Okay, right? How many things cover most of your body? And right, so that's on a Torah level. Okay, then rubo ve'eno makpid alav eno chotzetz. Okay, but if it's on most of the body and you're not makpid, then it's not chotzetz. Okay, so it's on most of your body, but you really don't care that it's there, and you're fine with it on your body. That's not a chatzitza. Vigazru. Oh, and then by the way, there's a third opinion, which is that so some people view hair and body as separate. Okay, so in other words, it's either rove of your hair or rove of your body and your machpid, that's midoraita. Some people say no, hair and body go together. So if it's on rove of your hair but it's not rove of your body, that's not midoraita. So there's a whole bunch of different ways about how exactly to understand this. It's actually interesting because it connects with this machloket about chofef. When we talk about chofef, there's a whole debate. In modern Hebrew, chofef means shampooing. But it's not clear from the Gemara when they talk about the chiyuv of chafifa, and this is what we talked about yesterday, staff, about that you need hot water to do chafifa. Is it only talking about your hair, or is it even your body? And there's a whole debate about whether the chafifa that you need to do from the Torah for preparation for mikveh, is it only that you have to wash your hair, or do you actually have to wash your whole body? Right? We obviously, in our day and age, people shower all the time, and people, you're obviously going to wash your body, but the question is the real need for lachfof, is that only the hair or is it also the body? So again, it would connect, you know, maybe they were worried that the most dirt, because hair is the most complicated. It's hard to get out the knots and the dirt and stuff gets entangled in your hair. Maybe that was more of a concern than the body where it was kind of easier. So again, so we start off with from the Torah, it has to be the majority and you have to be makpid. Again, depending on whether you mean hair or body or some combination. Rubo and you're not makpid is not a chatzitza, but Gazru, the rabbis made a gzera, and they said, if it's rubo she'eino makpid, there were gozer on it. If it covers the majority of your body, even if you don't really care and you leave it there all the time, there were gozer mishum rubo makpid. Because rov and makpid is a problem, so rubo ve'eino makpid, there were gozer on. And gazru miuto makpid mishum rubo makpid. They also were gozer on the minority that you don't want on your body. Okay, that's also a problem. So now the Gemara says, v'ligzor nami el miuto she'eino makpid. Why don't you say something? If you're already gozer on that, you're already gozer on that. Why don't we be gozer on a minority that you're not makpid on? Meaning, why don't we just say everything's a problem? Mishum miuto makpid, right? And as if we're making zerot, so once we said that a minority that you're makpid, let's say a minority that you're not makpid on. So they say, what do you mean? Higufa gzera va'anam nikor penigzor gzera l'gzera. That you're not going to be gozer gzera on gzera. The whole mi'ut HaMakpid was only Xera to begin with. So we're not going to be Xera on that and say Miuve no Makpid, and that's where permanent makeup comes. That would be something on the Mi'ut of your body, and you're not Makpid though, right? You don't care. You leave it on. You want it on all the time. So Makpid means you want to remove it, that you're not planning to remove. So therefore, it's not a problem, right? What's the biggest issue here? Like stitches and casts and things like that, which are not there permanently, right? You want to remove them. You don't really want them in your body. So those become a bigger problem when it comes to going to the mikvah. Okay, and generally we also say things that are going to be on your body for longer than 30 days, theoretically there's more room to say that already you're not makpid because you're leaving it on for the long term, even if you're not leaving it on forever like permanent makeup. Okay, and this also, whether it's d'oraita or d'rabbanan, is important in terms of, let's say, you already went to the mikveh and you're not sure, was it there, was it not? You know, once you have sveiko, well then sefek d'rabbanan will be meka. Amar Rav, now we're moving into when the woman goes to the mikveh, what time of day? So Amarav, Nida bizmana ena tovelet ela balayla, v'shelo bizmana tovelet bein bayom ubein balayla. So if it's on the day she's supposed to go to the mikveh, we already know 7 days she's in Nida, 7 full days, and she goes to the mikveh the night of the 8th. So when it's bizmana, then she has to go at night. But if it's not bizmana, let's say she didn't go the night of the 8th for whatever reason, she could go during the day of the 9th. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, so remember that's Rav. We're going to come back to him. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, bein bizmana, bein shelo bizmana, ena tovelet ela balayla mishum srach bita. He says it doesn't matter whether she's going on the 8th day, the 9th day, the 10th day, the 11th day. It doesn't make a difference. She always goes at night. Why is that? Very interesting halacha. Because we're worried her daughter is going to get confused, see her mother go to the mikvah. Her daughter obviously has no idea what day, you know, the mother's up to. She just sees her mother go to the mikvah, and therefore she's going to think that you can go during the day of the 7th. Now, why would you think this? So, Mapidom, we know you go at night. But remember, all the other tefillot are all in the morning. So she'll think, and normally what happens, you go in the morning, you wait till the sun sets, right, till Seder Kochavim, and then you become Tahor. So she'll think that she can go in the morning of the 7th, and when it comes to Nida, you can't do that. So we're worried she'll be confused, and this again shows a bit of a different reality nowadays. Nowadays people are much more careful, you know, nobody really knows they're going to the mikveh, they sneak out, and some families, I'm sure people figure it out, but, you know, there's, because of that, you know, in those days, remember, it was obvious, it was all out there, they were wearing different colored clothing, they were, right, everyone needed to know when they were tahorot and tmeo because of everything they were touching, so it's actually, you know, in their reality, it makes a lot of sense. So now, Rav said, remember, you can go, not on the wrong day, you could go during the day, as long as you're past your 7 days. Rav, Af Rav Hadrabe, but Rav changed his mind about it, and he also said you can't go during the day. How do we know this? To Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav Nida Bein Bizmana Bein Shelo Bizmana Ena Tovelet Ela Balayla Mishum Srach Bita. So he became convinced. Basically, over time, he became convinced of the other opinion, and he changed his mind about this. However, we're now going to see a slew of rabbis who matired it in particular situations. We're going to have a whole long list here. Itkin Rav Idi ben Arash, each one we're going to say he instituted in his city. Narash is his city. Lemit bal biyoma de Timnaya, you can tovel on the day of the 8th. Mishum Aryavata, there were lions around, and it was scary to go out at night. You have to think about, I always think about the sugya. I can't imagine how women went to the mikveh in those days. It was pitch black.
Freezing.
We're going to get to that in a minute. Okay. How they went, and the mikveh was generally out of the city. Okay. That was in the story yesterday about how she would come back into the city, and on the way into the city, she would start bleeding again. So I don't know how the women did it, really. But here you see that the rabbi started saying, yes, there's the ideal halacha, and then there's practically, what are we going to do? Rav Acha bar Yaakov b'Papunya. In Papunya, he instituted Mishum Ganve. There were robbers. Right? They always talk about that. That's why we have Kriyat Shema Alamita, right? The listim that are running around at night, and the fear of the night was really, they were very fearful of the night. It was scary to walk around. Rav Yehuda b'Pupadita Mishum Tzina. Here comes the cold, how freezing it was. Rava b'Mechoza Mishum Avulai. So Rashi has two interpretations. What are Avulai? Either their guards that were Ovdei Kochavim, the Shomrim, and they were worried, you know, maybe they get raped or something, or just robbed. Or Rashi says, Lishnachrina, binyanim shal ma'arot hayu baderech. There were these caves. And what were they worried? That people would fall in tiposham tistakein. Right? They didn't have iPhones with flashlights that they could walk in the dark. You know, maybe they carried a torch. But, you know, theoretically, you could fall and trip on something and fall into a ditch. So for all those reasons, they instituted they could go on the day of the 8th. Okay, I remember a case where we were on a cruise and someone needed a mikveh, and the cruise only stopped during the day, and couldn't go at night. So, you know, it was allowed to go during the day. So there are situations nowadays where you can actually go during the day if there's a need, right? We obviously don't have lions generally and, you know, things like that, but there are other situations that would necessitate, again, only on the day of the 8th and not on the morning of the 7th. But here comes the big question. Why not on the morning of the 7th? Think about it. Amalei Rav Papa l'Rava, Ula Abaye, he asked Rava and Abaye, Michte Ha'idna, nowadays, Kulu Safik Zavot Shavinu Rabbanan. The rabbi said all women, this was yesterday, right, we're going to always have to wait Sheva Nekiyim. So since we're already treated as Zavot, now when does the Zavot go to the mikvah? On the morning of the 7th. Nowadays, women are certainly past their Nida days when they go to the mikvah, because Nida days are 7 days, including the day she's bleeding. And women now need 7 clean days. So if that's the case, Why don't we litbilinu b'yamama d'shvia? Why don't we let her go on the morning of the seventh? Because she's definitely no longer nida. She's way past that. So why would we say that she has to wait? So mishum de Rabbi Shimon. They say it's based on Rabbi Shimon. Detanya. Here comes this braita. Achar titar. Okay, this is the pasuk. We'll read the whole thing. Im tiara mizova, right? When she becomes pure from her zava, v'safra la shivat nikiim, she counts 7 days. V'achar titar, and after that she becomes tahora, which means when is she tahora? Achar lekulan, shelote tumah mafsekeh b'nehem. So the first opinion says, what does this mean? Achar? It means she has to have 7 whole days that are clean. If she ends up bleeding in the middle of them, right? She has to start all over. There can't be any tumah that messes you up in the middle. It's not like we had a whole discussion, can you just drop that day and keep counting after that, and just you miss one day? No, it has to be a retzef, a continuum. Rabbi Shimon Omer, he darshins it differently. Achar titach, achar ma'aseh titach. Meaning, she's going to be pure after she goes to the mikvah. Aval amru chachamim, asur la'asot ken, shema tavo lidei safek. But you can't do that because what will happen if you go to the mikvah in the morning? What will happen? We're worried, if you remember what happened. She goes to the mikvah in the morning, but she has to wait till the end of the day to actually be Torah. Now we're worried, okay, there's a bit of a debate what exactly we're worried about here, but, achar ma'aseh, I didn't say that right. Let's go back. Achar ma'aseh titar, Rashi says, Kevan she'safra miktzat hayom shel zayin titar al yedei tefila. We say miktzat hayom kikulo. So achar titar sounds like after what we just said in the pasuk. The pasuk said you count 7 days and then you're tahor. So if you count in the morning, you should be fine at that point because you counted. So it sounds like it should be okay. But the rabbi said don't do that because if you think you're going to be okay, then what happens? Let's say you see blood that day. That you're not fully done. You're what we call a tful yom, right? You dunked in the mikvah, but what if you see blood that day? Then, and what if you end up, you know, you might end up sleeping with your husband because you say, I went to the mikvah already. So you keep, because of the safek of that, we say, no, you can't do that. So because he's worried that people will do that, they say, wait till the nighttime and only tovel at night. Even though theoretically she could tovel in the morning, we don't want to have any situation where she's going to end up, right? So Rashi says, what's the lidei safek? Shema tishamesh bo bayom v'tir em yad lachar tashmish. Let's say she'll have sex with her husband, and then after that she'll end up seeing blood. V'nimsa soteret kol shelefaneha. And then everything, all her 7 days are messed up. And tefilata psula, and her tefila is no good. And basically then, you know, she ended up sleeping with her husband when she was still a zava. Back to the whole preparation. And now we're going to get into when do we do this preparation. Okay, there's a whole debate in halacha. Do you do the preparation during the day? Do you do the preparation at night? Right? Why do it at night? Because it's the closest to the tefillah. What's the problem with doing it at night? The problem with doing it at night is you'll rush through it and you'll do it too quickly. Right? Seeing is an issue also. And you'll rush through and then, you know, you'll want to get to the mikvah already. Again, remember, it got darker and darker over time in those days, all the more so, and they don't want you to rush through your tefillah. So comes Rav Huna and he says, Isha chofefet be'echa b'shabbat v'tovelet b'shlishi b'shabbat. There could be a scenario where a woman could shampoo her hair or maybe even her body on Sunday afternoon and go to the mikvah Tuesday, which really means Monday night, okay, the following night. How do we know she can do this? He says, "Sheken isha chofefet be'erev Shabbat v'tovelet b'motzei Shabbat." On Motzei Shabbat, since generally they preferred that all the preparations happen during the day, and Motzei Shabbat, you obviously can't do your preparations on Shabbat. So in that situation, you're allowed to do your shampooing Friday and go to the mikvah Saturday night. So comes Rav Huna, and he says, based on that, you should be allowed to also Sunday night to Sunday afternoon to Tuesday night. It's the same till Monday night, right? Again, Tuesday, which is really Monday night. It's Orlish Shlishi. Then he says, Isha chofefet be'echa b'shabbat v'tovelet b'rivi'i b'shabbat. You can even do it from Sunday at day to Tuesday night, right? Remember, which is Wednesday day, which is Orla Wednesday. How do we know that? Shekein isha chofefet. He keeps giving these examples. Well, if you could do it in here, right? You could do it be'erev Shabbat v'tovelet b'motzei yom tov shachaliot achar Shabbat. Right, when Chag comes out, Motzei Shabbat. So you could, again, prepare on Friday for Sunday night. So likewise, you could do it on a regular day. Isha chofefet. Now he goes even farther. Becha b'Shabbat, v'tovela b'chamishi b'Shabbat. Okay, they're not talking about second day Yontif in Chutz La'aretz, but they are talking about Rosh Hashanah. Shekeni shachofefet be'erev Shabbat, v'tovela b'motzei shnei yamim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah. So theoretically, that could also happen where you end up, right? You do a Friday, and then Shabbat, Sunday, Monday, and then you're only going to the mikvah Tuesday, Monday night. So there you have Shchaliot achar Shabbat. So there again, you can end up with this huge difference. So the first opinion is, since you can do it in all those situations, therefore you can do it in a regular situation. Now, obviously, you can imagine one might say, well, that's because you have no choice, and here you have a choice, right. So maybe not. So
if it's Yom Tov or Shabbos, you're not doing anything. You're like at rest, whereas you're working and you're...
Okay, so first of all, right, there's an assumption. It's actually interesting that you bring that up, that when you're on Chag and Shabbat, you're not necessarily working, so you're not going to get as dirty. Some of the sources talk about, first of all, on Yom Tov, she was making dough, likely. You can cook, right? So, okay, so, well, actually, I don't know if they really could make the dough. They could bake, right? The earlier stages are more problematic, but theoretically, she was cooking. Cooking also could be messy, and they actually talk about, and she was eating a lot, stuff between her teeth and things like that. Anyway, they talk about it in the sources that you should be extra careful on those days not to get yourself too dirty because of that issue, okay? Because you know that you're not going to really prepare so well. So then they say, so that's the first opinion is, since you could do it then, you could do it on a regular day. Rav Chista amar, kulo amrinan, it's true, all those examples you gave are true, of Shabbat, Yom Tov, etc. But shekein lo amrinan, but we don't make that jump, exactly as you said, Sharon, we don't make that jump to, oh, you could do it on a regular day then. You're right about those days, but that's only, because what does he say? Hecha de efshar efshar, hecha de lo efshar lo efshar. If you can, then you shouldn't be doing that. And if you can't, you have no choice, you have no choice. Rav Yemar amar, afilu shekein nami amrinan. Okay, third opinion. We're going to have four ways of reading this. He says, you can say afilu. I'm sorry, you can say shekein. You can say we learn from those situations to our situations. However, he disagrees about one point. Levar mi isha chofefet be'acha b'Shabbat v'tovela b'chamishi b'Shabbat. He says, if you come out with Shabbat and then 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, you can't do that. There is no situation, you can't learn from Sunday to Thursday, which is really Wednesday evening, because the case you brought of the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah with Shabbat, there is no situation like that. In that case, they said that's way too much time that elapsed. We allow her to prepare at night, Motzei Chag. You can't leave so much time of 3 days in between. That doesn't work. So he basically says, I agree that you can learn from all the other situations. I just disagree about the last one because I don't even think that it's true when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. For sure, it's not going to be true on a regular day. Darash Mareimar, fourth opinion, Hilchata ki Rav Chista, he holds like Rav Chista that you can't say Shekein. Those cases all only hold true on Chag and Shabbat. Ukid Mataritz Rav Yemar. And he also said, though, when it comes to the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah following Shabbat, then you can't even do it on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so he says, he kind of has a split. He says, you can learn from all the situations, but you can't learn from that last situation. You can't even do that last situation in the original case, right? You can't, even in the case where it actually happens on Chag and Shabbat, you can't do it either. You would be toveling and you should shower at night. Okay, Ibayalahu. Last section for today. They ask the following question. Isha mau shetachof balayla v'titbo balayla. Okay, this is something that was kind of underline the previous sugya that you couldn't, but now they suggest maybe you can. Is it possible you could wash yourself at night and then go to the mikvah? Marzutra oser v'Rav Chinina misura shari. So there's a machloket whether Marzutra says no, Rav Chinina says you can. Amarle Rav Ada l'Rav Chinina misura. So Rav Ada said to Rav Chinina, lav hachi hava uvda b'debitu. Okay, we're going to have an interesting situation now. Wasn't there the following situation? So remember, Rav Chinina says you can. So he says, wasn't there a situation with the wife of Abba Mary Resh Galuta? Okay, the head, the Rosh Galut, he had an issue with his wife, De'ikut. Ikut comes from the Lashon of Ketata. They were having a fight, and she was supposed to go to the mikvah, and she decided, I'm just not going to the mikvah. So, Azar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Lefayusa. Okay, normally you would think the husband would try to appease her, but I guess that didn't work. So he sends the rabbi. Also, he was the Resh Galut. He was a very prominent person, so I guess he had, you know, people who kind of helped him out. So he sends Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak to try to appease her and get her to go to the mikvah. And now it was already nighttime. V'amrela, my ite. She says to him, what are you telling me to do? Hashta tiske And as now it's too late. I tell him, achar, okay, come tomorrow. Right? It's too late for me to go to the mikvah. Now, why is it too late? It was nighttime. She still could have gone. So, the yada maika amrele, he understood what she was saying. Okay, so this seems to indicate that you can't wash at night, because she was basically saying, well, I didn't wash my body. I didn't prepare myself in the mikvah. Too late. You know, come back tomorrow. Right, exactly. So, he was smarter than her. Yada maika amrele. He totally understood when she said, come back tomorrow, what she was alluding to, that, oh, well, I can't wash my hair now and I can't prepare myself for the mikvah. So he says to her, amar dudi chasart, what, you don't have a hot water boiler to boil up your water to shower? Tashtike chasart, you don't have a... What is it? A stool to sit on. Avde chasart, you don't have servants that are going to... Remember, she was the wife of the Resh Galuta. You don't have servants who can warm up your stuff and get everything prepared for you. So what do you see here? He obviously didn't think it was an issue to prepare at night. Okay, so there you see, and this is what we always say, an actual ma'aseh is always better, stronger than, you know, but then notice the situation. This situation is there was no choice. She couldn't have done it. You know, she didn't do it during the day. She was already after the fact. So maybe one could say, right, you have to think about, is it allowed for you to push it off till the night, or is it only if you kind of get into the situation? The Gemara doesn't address that right now, but anyway, that's kind of underpinning this. And like I said, interesting story to end with about, you know, this. And this happened throughout history, by the way, where women would use the mikveh as ways of, you know, if they were fighting with their husbands. Right. This was a way of the women using their power, right? And I don't think we would approve of this kind of method, but it was something. It was a way that women kind of took their... And like we said, in general, this whole, and I think there's a concern of the rabbis of women doing this. That's why, you know, the whole, it's the women are the ones deciding when they're in need and when they're not. They're in control of the whole thing, and the rabbis were well aware of that, and they could use it to, you know, to, you know, use their relationships with their husbands, or maybe gain a little bit of control in the relationship. So, food for thought.